This is the Blue Moon Podcast. Coming up, we've got all the news and views from Manchester City's week. It's your club, and this is your show.
Nearly a week on from City's loss against Tottenham, and the dust has now settled on the performance. But did that result, as some have suggested, blow the title race wide open? Or is it a minor blip at the end of a brilliant unbeaten run? Don't forget, City's last Premier League defeat was all the way back in October. Welcome to this week's Blue Moon Podcast, as we try to work out which of the footballing gods City have upset in the past so that Spurs can keep doing what they did at the weekend. But if truth be told, City were not good last Saturday, and none of us could really argue that Antonio Conte's side didn't deserve to take the points back to North London. Time to dust ourselves down and get back on the wagon. It's Everton at Goodison next, and we all know how historically City have had absolutely no problems there whatsoever. We'll also preview that tie with the help of David Downey from the Blue Room, plus get insight into Peterborough ahead of Tuesday's FA Cup tie, and we'll hear from the former City player Tommy Booth, the scorer of City's only ever goal at London Road. I'm David Mooney. I'm joined this week by City fans Kieran Murray.
Blue.
And One Football's Dan Burke.
Blue.
How are we both doing? You both well? Kieran?
Signed, yeah, all good, yeah.
Dan?
Yeah, I can't complain.
Good. That's a nice place to start, because I feel like we're going to complain for about half an hour here when we look back at that Spurs game, because...
Are you well, David Mooney? I didn't even ask you there.
I am good, yeah.
Surviving. No one ever asks him, do they? That's very rude of us.
It's very inconsiderate, very if anything. I know, I invite you onto my show, and then all of a sudden what happens is nobody asks ever how I am. I'm still a bit angry about weekend, actually, so let's dive into all of that. Kieran, the gap now is 3 points, but it is level games, so how are the nerves?
Not great, to be honest with you, David. I think Klopp said the other day, didn't he, that City can't smell our breath yet, but I think we certainly can. And it's not a pleasant whiff.
I thought you were going to say, and it stinks.
It does stink, yeah. I'm not that happy about it. I think it puts paid to any kind of theories early on in the season that the league had got boring and that City were well out of sight and it was just going to be a sort of dynasty of dominance for City from now on. There was still so much to play for, and with all the... with all the matches called off because of COVID and stuff and all the games in hand that built up, it just looks as if now teams are in a better place to kind of play catch-up with City a little bit. And it was a bit of a false flag to look at that big gap in the table when teams had so many games in hand and they've had a bit of a rest, you know. Yeah. I don't like it. I'm not that happy. And then Liverpool's massive win in terms of goal difference, was it last night against Leeds? That gives you an icky feeling as well. So, yeah, no, it's not pleasant. I wish we could have a little bit more daylight at the moment.
Yeah. Dan, have you noticed any contrition from all the people who in December were losing their heads over the idea that the league table was over and not listening to people like us who were saying, well, listen, like, there's still a long way to go here. And, like, there's games in hand. You know, things can still change. Because now you look at the situation, it's in City's hands still, but it's also in Liverpool's hands because they play each other.
Yeah, well, I've seen absolutely no contrition whatsoever, which is quite unsurprising, I guess, really, isn't it? Yeah, I was assured in December by some of the finest minds in football journalism that the title was over, we had nothing to worry about, and here I am rattling around like loose change in a washing machine all of a sudden. You know, I am pretty easily rattled, to be fair, and you know, I'm a bit like an easily spooked horse when it comes to these things. But I am starting to worry now that that game against Liverpool in April suddenly takes on massive importance, doesn't it? Assuming that the gap is still 3 points by then it's kind of the title is going to be on the line in that game. The story that I've been kind of telling myself this week is that while it is in both teams' hands, we still do have slightly the upper hand in this race.
Yeah, you know, yeah, yeah.
We are the home team when we play them. If we win all of our games, then we win the league. You know, it's as simple as that, really. So it's a little blip. They're allowed to have a blip, City, I think. They went on a great run, and it just shows you how ridiculous all that talk about the title race being over was, because... You know, people have been saying this week, the title race is back on. Well, doesn't that suggest it was never over in the first place? Like people are saying, like, well, it was so ridiculous that people were talking in such absolutes about it with so much of the season left to go. And it's game on now. And you know, if we do win the title from here, I think it will feel a lot sweeter and a lot more satisfying than it would have done if we just strolled to it and won it by 15 points. But there is a very real sense of jeopardy now, isn't there?
Yeah, the thing is as well, I mean, you mentioned there about if City win all their games, they can win all their games and draw against Liverpool and win the title. So
yeah, true.
They can go into that Liverpool game with slightly more leeway than Liverpool have if things stay as they do right now. So again, like you say, you'd rather be in City's position than Liverpool's right now. You'd rather be the leader being chased than doing the chasing. Kieran, I'm getting very, very kind of 2018-19 vibes about this run-in now. It was around this time of the year that Liverpool drew at Goodison to leave them needing a result from someone else against City. Goodison next for City as well.
David.
sorry. I'm very sorry.
You know,
don't you? I don't believe in omens. So.
Yeah, no, I do. But what I don't want to go through again is 18-19 because it was horrible. It was vile. It was a really, really difficult time to be a City fan.
Yeah, I mean, the doing of it was not nice, but the having done it was very nice.
That's what I was just going to say. Don't get me wrong. It was one of the best days as a City fan that I can ever remember, because we weren't at the game against Brighton. We were, most of us, all together in the pub watching, and it was just tremendous. It was really, really good fun. So if you were to tell me now and fast forward that the outcome's going to be the same, I'm all for it. But the not knowing in the remaining games and how tight the games were and the constant sort of looking over your shoulder as to what they were doing, and it's squeaky bum time already, and you don't really like it, do you? I don't really want to credit them, but in all this, you know, City have dropped they've had one draw and one defeat, and then, as Dan said, you know, it suggests that the title race was never really over. But I mean, I thought we were so unbelievable with our run of wins since October. Like, what have Liverpool been doing? In the meantime, they sort of snuck up on me. Do you know, I didn't really realise how in contention they were, because I was led to believe we were miles out of it and miles ahead. So, I've been aware of them the whole time, but they've also sort of snuck up on me too, if that makes sense.
It feels like you're in the mood to write a stern letter to someone.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Do you remember when people were saying though that the problem with the City team is they don't give you a chance. You can't afford to drop any points against them, or you don't win the league. And it's like like you say, we've drawn one game and lost one game since the end of October, and Liverpool are now breathing down our necks with their horrible breath. And it's exactly the same for both teams. But people don't say that about Liverpool. Everything Liverpool do is, we should be thanking Liverpool for keeping this title race around. What a triumph against adversity it is! Like no one's talking about them as if they have some sort of like ridiculous advantage over everyone else, do they?
The funniest thing was watching Liverpool fans and United fans, who were so angry about City's dominance in the league this season, going back over their old teams to say how actually terrible they were, when they were like, well, look at this, the brilliant United, brilliant Liverpool team of the 80s, they actually got beat seven times in that season. It's like, all right, why are you like denouncing your own achievements to say how shite you were back then?
Like, I find myself doing a bit of that this week, though. Like the Spurs game, I had a weird feeling of like disappointment that we'd lost, but also kind of vindication and saying that, we told you we weren't that good. Like, you were saying that we were ridiculously good and no one could beat us. And look, we've been beaten. Like, so what you were talking about was complete nonsense the whole time.
Yeah. I always think of that that clip from The Simpsons where Principal Skinner has the meltdown and the microphone's on and the entire school hears him. And Bart just goes, cool, I broke his brain. And that's what City have done to everybody at the moment. They've broken people's brains. Dan, you mentioned the Spurs game. We're going to have to talk about it now. We're 10 minutes in and we've managed to dodge the issue so far. Why did City not get going in that game? Guardiola didn't do anything funky with his setup or with his lineup. He didn't do anything, any of the overthinking allegations stuff. So what happened?
I'm going to say straight off the bat, maybe this is just my opinion, but I didn't actually think City played that badly in this game. It was frustrating. We came up against a team who kind of had our number from the first minute, and we'll talk a little bit more in a minute about why that is. But I didn't think City's performance was awful. I know a lot of people are kind of frustrated at the amount of crosses and kind of dinks that were being put into the box. And yeah, I was getting a bit frustrated by that as well. But then when you sort of look back at the game, both of our goals came from little dinks into the box. And there were times when they were trying to work the ball into the box, you know, play a little one one-twos on the edge of the box or dribbling in. Like Cancelo had a opportunity in the first half where he took it past a couple of players and just missed the target. But for the most part, I don't really see how else you get around a team who are going to put men behind the ball like Spurs did and have good defenders behind the ball as well. It's really hard to break a team down like that. And defensively, I didn't think City were great. We were quite easily broken against. But again, Spurs have got a player like Harry Kane dropping deep, picking passes, playing people through. They've got quality on both flanks with Son and Kulusevski. So I think, we've seen how Spurs played against Burnley in midweek. And I don't think they've really learned any lessons about themselves from the game at City. I think it was just a bit of a freak game where it was kind of a perfect storm for Spurs. City were perhaps a little bit unfortunate or perhaps they got exactly what they deserved. I haven't really decided, but yeah, I didn't think it was that bad. I didn't think there was anything tactical that you'd say that you would point to that Guardiola did wrong. It was just not our day.
Yeah, a friend of mine as a Spurs fan said that Harry Redknapp always used to say sometimes just one of those days. And I do wonder if that's the case. But that said, Kieran, the number of loose passes there were in that game, I remember thinking early on, like Guardiola's halftime team talk here is going to be that thing he says where he says keep passing it to people in the same t-shirt, because it's like they'd forgotten to do that in spells. The number of times where passes were short or they were overhit or they just to nobody in particular and they were into empty space when nobody was making the run. The thing that concerned me was that it was kind of under no pressure. You look at teams like Palace and Southampton when they've come to the Etihad and got results, they've put City under pressure and they've forced those loose passes. I didn't feel like Spurs were doing that.
No, I kind of agree with what Dan has said in that I didn't think City were terrible collectively, and I didn't think it was one of our worst days at the office in terms of the sum of our parts. I just thought like too many individual performances were flawed and too many sort of individual cock-ups sort of led to a really bad day all round in terms of like our performance. I think Cancelo had one of his worst games that I remember, certainly since his kind of renaissance last season. If you kind of track him when you watch the highlights of the goals, which I would never have done again, only that I was on the show. but he's really at fault. Rodri looked so rusty and it reminded me of, really bad HMS Plodry days. and the whole back four were culpable for back five if you include Rodri, back six if you include Ederson. It was just individually, I thought we just kept messing up all over the pitch, and those loose passes, as you talk about, David, really played into that. But I turned around to Higgy at one point towards the end of the first half, I think, and was like, "We have these on toast, like possession wise, and what we were doing." And Gundogan hit the post, didn't they? And then
there was a spell, wasn't there, in the first half? Yeah,
yeah. So it was just what we were doing under the sort of Guardiola philosophy and what we always do to carve out wins, we were still doing. It's just that Spurs were set up so well. And I don't think they put us under pressure to play badly, but it's just one of those things when we're the best team in the country and the current champions, you've got a canny manager like Conte, you've got Harry Kane with a point to prove, and our players just having a really bad day individually. As Dan said, a perfect storm. I think everything just... And then the footballing gods who just will not stop giving us mad games against Spurs. It was just one of those that conspired to be a mad day.
Yeah, let's look at the end into the game, Dan, because with the way that that Spurs' third goal was disallowed, and then City went on to get a last minute penalty. Did you think it was finally our turn to get some VAR luck against Spurs?
yeah, kind of. I would have been happy with a draw at that point, really. Obviously, when you score the penalty in stoppage time and there's still a few minutes of stoppage time left, you think, come on, let's go and win it. If the game had ended in a draw, I would have said that was probably fair enough and would have taken that. To then lose the game was really upsetting, wasn't it, from that point?
And, you really shouldn't. You get back into it there, you really shouldn't lose, should you? That's the thing.
Well, there's a moment we get the ball back from the kickoff after Mahrez's penalty, and the ball goes out to Cancelo on the left, and he just takes his eye off the ball, and it rolls out of play and goes out for a throw-in. And that was the moment we lost the game, I think, really. That was the moment that Spurs got their shape together again. They move forward, then they don't stop. It's Cancelo again, isn't it? He didn't stop the cross coming in. Yeah. No, Cancelo was beaten in the air, was he? I can't Walker was beating him. That's right. Yeah. And then
but Cancelo didn't even put his foot out to stop that cross. It looked as if something was playing on his mind. Honestly, he was a million miles away that whole game.
Yeah, and then when the cross comes in, you can tell that Kane is going to win the header. And yeah. I was just hoping, please don't hit the target, or please it be a header that Edison saves. But as soon as the ball goes in, you're thinking, bloody hell, they're going to score here, and they did. And yeah, it was gutting, and it's horrible that it keeps happening to us against Spurs. But you know, that's just our luck, isn't it? Sometimes. Yeah.
The thing is, though, Kieran, in all honesty, I know we talked earlier on about the title race and the fact that City are now only 3 points ahead of Liverpool, and you know it's in both teams' hands, all that sort of stuff. Is there any real difference, though, between getting 0 points for that game and getting 1 point for that game? I know it keeps City in kind of just away from Liverpool, but if Liverpool win that game at the Etihad, they're still only a point behind City. The pressure's still on. It's just the same as 18-19 in that case. It's it doesn't make a massive difference, does it?
Well, I mean, if you want to tell yourself that, David, to make yourself feel better, that's all right. But I think psychologically getting the draw when we hadn't played terribly well, when we'd been given that VAR shout and got a penalty in stoppage time, psychologically to claw that back, to snatch, you know, a point from the jaws of defeat, would have been quite nice. Also, I suppose it's such fine margins with us in Liverpool, and it looks as if it probably is going to come down to the wire, because their form doesn't look like it's going to subside at any point soon. I suppose an extra point on the board would have been nice, and you know, I suppose that leads into goal difference as well. I suppose it's only one goal, but to leave with a goal difference sort of equal instead of one behind, that might have been nice. It just would have been nice to have not left with a sucker punch of a, 96-minute goal or whatever, scored by the player we were targeting all last summer, who hadn't scored in four and hadn't scored in nine against us before that. So, yeah, I would have taken a draw all day long, especially when it looked as if we were 3-1 down at 1.2. So, it was just a fucking really difficult day. One that was horrible.
At least we can laugh about it now. Dan, conceding three at home, I would generally say, in the, I'm not going to say the Mansour era, because that first kind of, the first throes of the Mansour era, City were very much in transition, but in the later days, so Mancini kind of onwards, conceding three at home isn't really normal. It's happened three times this season. Spurs at the weekend, they did it against Leicester, 6-3 they won though, and then they did it against Leipzig, 6-3 then. It's only happened, other than this season, it's only happened once since that Spurs game in the Champions League, and that was the 5-2 against Leicester at the start of last season, and three of them were penalties. So is it a bit concerning that the defence has got a bit leaky?
I don't know, really, because we've still got the best defensive record in the league, haven't we?
Yeah, no, it's odd, isn't it? Yeah.
A weird quirk of the statistics. Away from home, we're still defending really well. I wonder if we just throw a bit of caution to the wind at home sometimes, and that's why it happens. I mean, those three games have all been like really entertaining, dramatic games. The Leicester one in particular, we were 4-0 up at half-time and probably took our foot off the gas a little bit and had Fernandinho in midfield. You know, I think that always leaves us a little bit more exposed these days than when Rodri's playing there. I mean, it could have been four goals in this Spurs game, and we were quite lucky that VAR decision came to our rescue there. I don't think defensively they played very well at all throughout the game. I mean, Diaz's decision to step up and try and catch Son offside in the first few minutes, and then that leads to the goal, was really poor. And then even I think Cancelo getting nutmegged for that goal was quite poor. And Edison. He's a great goalkeeper in many ways. You know, he contributes so much to City in terms of his footwork and to the build-up play. But as a shot stopper, I think he leaves a lot to be desired sometimes. I thought he was pretty weak on that Harry Kane disallowed goal. So it's not something that's concerning me a great deal, because, like I said, we've conceded 17 goals in this all season in the league, which is the best record in the league. But they're going to have to tighten up a little bit in some of these bigger games that are coming up, I think.
Yeah. Laporte and Diaz dealing with Kane and Son, Kieran. The thing that makes me nervous is that I just feel like Liverpool will look at that game and go, let's have a go at them.
Same, yeah. Any team with the ability to kind of drop deep,
catches high up the pitch and then getting behind would, yeah, would strike fear in there.
But now I think about it, Spurs sat deep all game and Liverpool won't do that, will they? So it will be a different game. It will. Yeah.
And if they do, we'll just play for a draw, like you say. Yeah. So that suits us better. They have to come and win. So
yeah,
they're not going to do that, are they? Yeah.
Pep has 2 months to overthink about it, doesn't he? So we're all right.
I'm overthinking about it already. Listen to this.
Yeah, true. Oh, yeah. No, I thought Spurs' setup was perfect. You know, they did it. It was a masterclass on us because they weren't particularly great. Nothing that they did apart from how they scored against us, you know, really impressed you. What did they score? Three out of four attempts, was it? And the fourth was that amazing save from Ederson. But I don't know if this is a bit reductive and a bit too basic, but you just wonder how John Stones would have coped. Would he have known Kane a little bit better from the England setup? You know, I don't know if reports covering himself in glory this season. But some of what they were doing to get out wide and to push us in the channels, and then everybody was following across, like Sterling was going to Davis, Walker was going to Sessegnon, Rodri was then drifting over wide, and Kane was just dropping into those pockets time and time again. And I read that after the match in the dressing room, they just all sat there going, how do we deal with that? How do we follow Kane? Do we go with him or do we not? And it just seems a bit mad that we got beaten by a tactic that we've deployed for two seasons now of our four players dropping deep into pockets and trying to create space for others. It's just a bad day at the office that we just kind of have to take on the chin and move on with. Defeats are part of football.
Yeah, I do think, Dan, there's been a little bit of reaction after the game that was almost a case of look at what you could have won with Kane, but it wasn't. It wasn't that, was it? Like if the only difference that would have made to that game if Kane was playing for City is that he wouldn't have been in the Spurs team to be able to do that against them. It's as simple as that, isn't it? That is too reductive, isn't it?
Yeah, well, I mean, just going back to people talking nonsense on Twitter for a moment, I've seen a few people kind of pivoting from City have got too much money, nobody can hope to compete with them, their squad is too big, too deep, to, oh, they should have paid whatever it took to sign Kane in the summer, and they would have won this game and won the league easily. It's like, what, do we spend too much money or not enough money? Like, which one is it? It can't be both, guys. He was awesome in this game, wasn't he, in a way that he hasn't been for much of the season. I think he's shown a few flashes of brilliance, and I've kind of wondered how City would have looked with Kane in the team when you look at the way we played this season with a kind of false nine. Would we actually be any better if we had a number nine? And you look at what Kane can do in terms of dropping deep and picking passes and still getting on the end of chances and finishing chances, and you think, yeah, he would have scored a hatful and would have improved us. I was not very much behind the signing of him in the summer because I think he's too old for the kind of money that Spurs were wanting. I think he's too injury prone. I never doubted his quality as a player. And I think, yeah, it would have been an amazing signing for us, but we're still top of the league having not signed him. So it's not gone too badly, has it?
Yeah. It doesn't feel like City will try again this summer, Kieran, but if they did, how do you feel?
No, I wouldn't like it. I think that ship has sailed. I agree with Dan. I'd never really wanted him. He just didn't feel like, I mean, I know he's an amazing striker and he would get a hat full of goals for us, but, you know, sometimes you just don't have the feeling about a player in the sort of setup of the City that you imagine. While he was wheeling away celebrating the other night, Bob was shouting at him, win a fucking trophy. So, as a trophy repellent, I don't know how well he would have set up, but yeah, I just really, really, really badly want Haaland or nobody. Really, to be honest with you, I would be happy. I'd be unbelievably happy if we signed Haaland, and if not, then continue sort of playing the way we're playing now. Maybe give Delap a shout.
Yeah. Well, let's move on. If Spurs are a bogey team of the now, City are going to a bogey team of the past this weekend. I'm not going to lie, I'm still feeling a bit uneasy about saying that, but it has been 9 wins in a row against Everton now and 5 wins out of 6 at Goodison Park for Pep Guardiola. Old habits die hard, certainly in my head anyway. Everton have been having a bit of a turbulent season so far too, so to get a view of what the situation is like in the blue half of Merseyside at the moment, I've been speaking to David Downey from the Blue Room podcast about the differences they're seeing under Frank Lampard.
Yeah, it's definitely changed. It's definitely changed for the better as well. I think, in essence, what happened amongst the fans who just got sick and tired of what's going on at boardroom level, at owner level, certainly, with Farhad Moshiri and what he seems to think he's well, he's able to do. He's able to do whatever he wants. He's the owner of the football club, and there stands the problem for many people. I think he's basically treated it like his own train set, like we've all done when we're little kids. And I think he was dangerously close. And I'm talking about the way in which things went with Benitez towards the end of his tenure, that this is an Everton club. This is a football club. This is an essential football club in many regards, to all of us anyway, in our daily lives, but also a traditional English football club that's been there since day one, that threatened its status in the Premier League. And then to go and get Frank Lampard, quite a shrewd appointment. I think when you looked at what happened with him at Derby and what he did at Chelsea, I thought he was absolutely fine. He looked like he'd done decent jobs. And then to bring him here, it does sound as such a risk. And then when he's come in, things have quite quickly got a lot better. And by that, I'm talking almost exclusively about how Goodison is. To answer your initial question, a lot of people are now devoted to making this atmosphere much better, making it as hostile as possible for away teams when they come and visit us. And you'll have seen that his first game against Brentford in the FA Cup, to probably our best win of the season against Leeds a couple of weeks ago when we won 3-0. The one thing that just hasn't changed, though, is the sort of philosophy that seems to be so deep within and lied within the players that we have away from home. Because I went to Newcastle recently, we had Southampton the other day. There were two carbon copies of what happened under Benitez. So I begin to think, well, you know, there's only so much Lampard and Paul Clements we brought in with them can actually do. So in essence, I think Goodison is getting better. It can be a toxic place, almost on the ticking of a finger. It can be a toxic place. You'll know that. You'll have been there with the City, and that's happened before. But yeah, essentially, it's getting better, and it feels much better than it did against Benitez. As a season ticket holder, I actually look forward to going to a game now. Even with the predicament we're in the Premier League, it feels a lot better to go there rather than trying to get rid of your ticket.
Yeah, it reminds me a little bit what you were saying there of Main Road at times, because when City were in the 90s, when City made their excuses and left the Premier League and then made their excuses and left Division One, there was a sense that the way that Main Road was, it was a very, very hostile place, but for the home players. And like that, just the atmosphere just wasn't conducive to getting a team, you know, at that stage for City promoted and promoted again. For Everton, are you in danger of relegation this season? It sounds daft to ask that question, because I look at the league table and think, well, there's plenty of teams there that surely will finish below Everton this season. But then when you look at the points total, it's really close, isn't it?
Yeah, I don't think it's a daft question at all. I think you'll know this more than me, sadly for you and okay for me, how this works and how this stuff ends up happening when you get into that predicament and that sort of situation that you're standing there looking at it thinking, oh, we'll be fine. You know, you get a decent win at home, i.e. that one we did against Leeds the other week, and then think, yeah, Everton have got plenty to stay up. But then I look at the table, I look at the fixtures, I look at how many games Burnley, for instance, have got in hand because they missed so many due to the COVID situations. We've still got to go to Watford. We've still got to play everybody below us. Newcastle have got to come to Goodison as well. There's a lot up in the air for Everton. And I think one of the worst things somebody can tell you is you're too good to go down. I think there are many clubs, yourselves included, who have been told that in years gone by that have paid the price of feeling that everything's going to be okay. Look, we're one of them. We've been in that situation before where we've had to, you know, pick up a few points towards the end of the season and maybe those last day of the season nightmares against, you know, when we were up against it with Bolton, when we were up against it, of course, with the famous Wimbledon one in 94. There are some of us who aren't, you know, young enough to not remember this. So Everton can absolutely go down, Dave. Everton can absolutely go down. But I do think, and I do feel, and I don't think I'm being too naive to say this, I think at home, which, I mean, it's probably a step too far to say you'll see against City, because you guys are a different level, as you know. I'd be surprised if Everton get anything against City this weekend. But other than that, I think the games we've got at home, I think we'll have enough to stay up. I think if you look at the table this season as well, I think probably 35, 36 at a push will be enough to get you 17th and higher. There's nowhere near going to go to the old 40-point thing that we always used to talk about.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned the game this weekend there. We've barely talked about that so far, and it's interesting, I think, that the number of times that City have come to Goodison Park, and the Everton fans have been going, well, actually, if City win, it's not the end of the world, because Liverpool are near the top of the table. I remember that that was in 2014. There was one of them in 2018. Have we got another one of those this weekend?
For some, we have, and I don't know why, because if we're sitting in the middle of the table and we're looking at the Premier League at the top and thinking, oh no, Liverpool are on one again, we just want City to get it done nice and early. We can all enjoy spring and summer and then rigmarole next season. This feels very different. This feels like they're actually on the charge, properly on the charge this time. You guys have got to play them at home. And then, look, like I've just said to you, Everton aren't good enough to not get relegated. There's every chance that Everton get relegated this season. If there are Evertonians listening to this, I don't want to think that I'm saying any sort of, you know, doom under and stuff or anything like that. But I'll look at the situation and I think, well, Everton desperately still need enough points to stay in this division. That is a fact. And you know, this weekend there'll still be many Evertonians that if you're going along there, you'll see, you'll be happy when Manchester City come away with 3 points, simply because, you know, the worst nightmare you can imagine is already written for many. Liverpool win the league, Everton get relegated. They would absolutely love that. There are some of our fans who would not even care about Everton as long as Liverpool did not win the league. Believe me, there are people who are like that. So I'm not going to go as far as saying I guarantee you the fact that there won't be any Evertonian there saying that they'd be happy to lose, but there will be. There'll be people who'd happily see City win this. I've spoken to many of them on Twitter.
Yeah, well, let me tell you, 1996, City relegated from the Premier League, United won the title. It's not it's not the nicest place. Let me put it that way. In terms of this game, we saw City against Spurs. City struggled against Spurs, let's be honest there. If Everton are going to get a result in this game, who's going to do it?
Yeah, I mean, I think that the midfield area has been a massive concern. You know, people would say all over the 11 has been a massive concern, apart from probably Jordan Pickford. I think there's every chance that Ben Godfrey comes back in as well at the back. We've still got massive issues with Mason Holgate at the back. Yerry Mina again is out with his traditional injury, and Michael Keane's in there. Look, we've got to sit deep. We have to sit deep, otherwise pace wise you will absolutely destroy us. Midfield's where the issue's been, particularly away from home, but at Goodison it's actually looked okay. Van der Beek, who come in, obviously none of your guys are going to like for him being any good for us, but he looked the real deal when he came to Goodison and made his debut there. He looked really good and he was able to get a tick out of Alan, who's essentially probably our most important centre midfielder, not because he's the best, but because he's in the most important position at defensive midfield. You know, when you've got the likes of Rodri coming up against him, when you've got the likes of the wide areas you guys have got, that has to come to the fore for us. I think Alan's, what, 32, nearly 33 now, coming towards the sort of end of his career. He's been really good, but then he'll simultaneously be absolutely dreadful. And if you look at Lampard's game so far, that's all it's been. It's been, he's absolutely fine. He's been really good. Sometimes man of the match at home at Goodison, but away from home, the lad's not looked like he's a professional footballer. But that position is crucial. Decore, I don't think he's going to make it against City. I think he's probably back for the game the following week. But he's going to be massive for us. He's going to be essential. He's been a really good signing. And he's able to play in a load of different positions in the midfield area. Andre Gomez as well, somebody else who just absolutely stunk the place out at St. Mary's at the weekend. That midfield place needs to work. It needs to be something bigger and better than what it's been. In terms of attacking, I mean, Richarlison barely got a kick against Southampton. At Goodison, I would expect that he might get a couple of chances. But for us to get a result, and by a result I mean a point, because I don't think we could win it, it's going to be that midfield area that we have to absolutely meet City at least for 70 minutes of the game, let alone 90. It's going to be a real sort of proper dogs of war stuff. You'll remember when Joe Royal, former loved at your place, used to say dogs of war. That's the type of thing that I feel it needs to be in City for us to get anything from the match.
Yeah. Before we finish, David, let's have a prediction for the charity bet. So what score are you going for?
I think City 3. I think we'll get 3-1 Man City.
You see stats pop up all the time about clubs and players, and you want to know that exact thing about City. There's an answer. Statcity.co.uk. Want to find out all of the players who played alongside club legends like David Silva, Sergio Aguero or Vincent Kompany? Or maybe you'd like to know which team found it hardest to score past Joe Hart. You can find out City's record in every competition, at every stadium, and under every manager. Just go to statcity.co.uk and browse away. That's statcity.co.uk.
Please give us your backing. Patreon.com/Blue Moon Podcast.
That was David Downey from the Blue Room Podcast. I'm going to start, weirdly, with this one by going back to a question that we got a few weeks ago. This is Colin James on Twitter. Sent us this after the Spurs game and basically said, the Saturday tea time curse strikes again. He was replying to his own tweet that he sent us on the 23rd of January that said, City's record in Saturday tea time games is poor. Last season, I think they dropped points in 4 out of 7 such games. 3 of our next 4 are Saturday tea time. Does this concern you? And we we addressed it on the show that week, and we kind of looked at the record, and I kind of poo-pooed it a little bit because I went back and had a look at how City have been doing. This season so far, the updated record now after the Spurs game is for Saturday 5:30 p.m. kickoffs, it's played 5, won 3, drawn 1, lost 1. Since the start of last season, though, it's played 12, won 6, drawn 3, lost 3. So they've only won half of the ones that they played since the start of last season. And City are going to Goodison on a Saturday evening. So what do you make of all that, Dan?
I wonder if there was an explanation for it. Like, it can't be that they're having a big lunch and feel tired in the afternoon or something, can it? Like, but I guess the scheduling of these games is that they are generally against the top teams, so that obviously makes it more difficult. We played Southampton at 5:30, if I remember rightly, and drew, but they're a team who are in pretty good form at the moment, or were when they played against us. Maybe when you go into an away ground, whoever you play in, the home crowd are a bit more up for it and the atmosphere is a bit more electric, and that has an effect on the game. I don't know. It's weird, isn't it? And I am nervous about this game at Everton, to be honest, very, very much so. And I'm sure Everton fans would say, watching us recently, you have no reason to be worried at all. What concerns me most about playing Everton, I think, is that they are, to borrow a Simpsons reference again, is to, you know, the bit when Sideshow Bob's stepping on all the rakes and they keep hitting him in the face.
Yeah.
They're like that as a football club, aren't they? Even when they win a game, it usually hits them in the face, and it's a game that they kind of don't want to win, and for them to beat us and let Liverpool back in the title race would just be the most obvious predictable thing that has ever happened. So that's my big fear going into this game, that they're gonna shoot themselves in the foot,
Smack themselves in the face with a rake. Yeah,
indeed.
Kieran, am I all right to say that the Goodison curse is over given City's record there under Guardiola? Because it doesn't feel like I'm all right to say it, but the record speaks for itself. Played 6, won 5, lost 1.
I actually think that under Benitez we probably would have struggled a lot more. I mean, they're famous last words, of course, but you know, just I always remember in a Benitez setup, whether he was at Chelsea or Newcastle in recent years, he was just unbelievably defensive, and City found it really hard to play around him. So yeah, I don't know if the Goodison curse is over necessarily. But hopefully that Spurs game would just be the kick up the arse that we needed, and any sort of lingering, I don't know, complacency or thinking that we're going to stroll to the title has kind of waned a little bit. So maybe we can just attack the game in a really solid manner. But yeah, Pep's done really well against Everton, hasn't he? They're a team that I've always feared and always been nervous about, especially that I live in Merseyside as well. So Yeah, hopefully the curse is over for good. Yeah, that was a terrible one for a few years, wasn't it?
Yeah, I'm just thinking about those times. I put it to David in the interview there. It's weird the number of times City go to Everton needing to win to keep Liverpool off their backs, and Everton fans are going, I don't really know what to do here. It's like it happened in 2014, it happened in 2019, and now it's happening again this season, Dan.
Yeah, well, we won those games as well, didn't we? So hopefully it'll be the same result this time around. But
What do you think needs to happen? Is it simply that City need to win, or does it need a good performance as well?
Oh, well, I'd love to see both. Obviously, I think we do have a habit of bouncing back really well from bad results. So I'm hoping that will be the case. I don't think we should regard the Spurs defeat as kind of a wake up call, but I think it may just kind of sharpen the minds and City know kind of exactly what they need to do. There's no ambiguity about it now, is there really? It's kind of like keep winning and everything will be okay. Drop more points and you're going to be in a bit of trouble. I mean, I do think we're going to drop points again before the end of the season. I think Liverpool will too. I don't think it's going to be one of those where we both got on some mad winning run, but if that is if that has to be the case, then it's got to start this weekend, because if you think last weekend's result put a whole different complexion on the title race, then losing and Liverpool obviously in the Carabao Cup final this weekend, so they'll have another game in hand over us, and psychologically I think it's the ball is going to be firmly in their court, so it's a must-win game as far as I'm concerned this weekend.
Yeah. Kieran, you mentioned you live in Merseyside. Do you know many Everton fans?
Yeah, loads. I've got really, really good friends with a lot of Everton fans. Yeah.
How are they all feeling? Because obviously, fresh input at Everton in Lampard is probably a little bit dangerous for City, because they can't really plan as well for it as they can plan for someone who you can watch them and see what they'll do. How are they all feeling that you've been speaking to about Lampard?
Dead happy, really, really happy. I think it was an absolute disgrace what happened to Everton fans with Benitez's appointment. None of them wanted him, for obvious reasons to do with Liverpool, but also just he's a bit of a dinosaur now in the footballing world, and Everton fans really, really want to kick on. They've got a new stadium on the way. They've got a kind of vision of the future and kind of leaving behind some of the bad things that kind of associate with them, you know, the rakes in the face, as it were. And I think Lampard coming in, it's a manager who they wanted, young, fresh ideas. Did okay at Chelsea, but will be given a bit more freedom and less pressure at Everton. And yeah, they seem to be in a good place at the moment, which hopefully we can we can destroy on Saturday evening. Yeah,
yeah. I was going to say, Dan, they've won their last two home games. The record before that was one win in the previous seven home games. So it feels like things are turning around. Obviously, getting something out of City is a big ask for them, but it does feel like it's one that we can't take our eye off, isn't it? That's probably the best way to put it.
Yeah, totally. I mean, they were really awful away at Southampton last week, by all accounts, and awful against Newcastle the game before that, both away from home. I think Goodison has a habit of being a very hostile ground where they want it to be, and that could be a factor here. But I wouldn't say that Everton are in particularly great form going into this game. And we have a pretty good record against Frank Lampard's teams in the past. All right, it's quite a small sample size, but there it is. So I think we have plenty of reasons to be confident about this game. But there is a lot of trepidation in my mind going into it, to be honest.
Didn't a defeat by Lampard's Chelsea hand the league to Liverpool in 2020?
Oh, don't do that. I forgot about that, yeah.
Handing the league is, I don't know if you would call it that, because they were about 15 points clear at the time. Yeah. So,
yeah, I'm only messing.
Yeah. Now, City go to Peterborough on Tuesday in the FA Cup fifth round, and it's a ground that won't be too familiar for most of our travelling fans. City have only been to London Road once before. That was back in 1981, and that was also the FA Cup fifth round as well. John Bond's side won 1-0, and Tommy Booth was the scorer of the only goal. I've been speaking to him to get his memories of that game.
I've been in and out of the side because I'd had a couple of discs removed from my back, so I didn't really know if I was going to play or not. You know, but it was just a matter of fact that it was Pete. You know, I think we were in the second or third division at the time, and we just thought to get down there and get the result.
Yeah, what was the mood like in the squad at that time? Because obviously the FA Cup, you didn't know that you were going to go on such a good run in the FA Cup at that point.
No, I mean, they're, like John Saintsy and John Bond, who were in, like they came in and. Some lads didn't see eye to eye with them, like, but then we went on this cup run, and that was sort of bonded us all together, and we was all looking forward to trying to get to Wembley.
Yeah, you scored the winning goal at London Road. What do you remember of that goal?
I remember it was I was playing in midfield at the time as well, and the ball, it was a corner. I think the ball came across, and it was, I think it was Kevin Reeves who had the first go at it, and it come back off the backside of one of the defenders, and it come to my foot, and I just hit it, and that was it, you know, in the back of the net, and that was game over, you know, so we take that anytime.
Yeah, well, was it a tough game? Because I mean, you think of playing teams from different divisions in the FA Cup, it gets hard when you go away to these grounds like that, doesn't it?
Of course it does. I mean, they've got nothing to lose, like, and especially when they're at home as well, like, and you're under pressure to get the result because you're obviously favourites, and hell of a lot of things to think about, and you're just glad to get away from the ground with a win.
Yeah. What was it like when the final whistle went?
Oh yeah, it was great. I mean, we celebrated, and then we obviously went straight back to Manchester on the coach, and me and a few of the lads went out for a few beers, and we went into Manchester, and we never bought a beer anywhere because all the City lads who had been to the game, City fans, had obviously come back early before us, got back before us, and they were chanting our names out, and they said they wouldn't let us buy a drink at all. So it was a good day all around.
Yeah. That obviously that run ended with the FA Cup final against Spurs. What are your memories of that FA Cup run?
Well, we just did the run itself, like, and then I mean, I got injured for the semi final, and did play in the semi final, and then we go down to the final, and John Bond told me the day before, and I was sat with Joe Corrigan, and as we were going down, that I was playing, and I said, "Oh right, that's great," you know, and but when we got the next day when we woke up, we had a pre-match meal. He read the team out, and I looked at Joe Corrigan, and my name wasn't on it. And I just couldn't believe it. I mean, the night before he told me I was playing, and then didn't even say anything to me. I left the club then. I walked out and went straight to the train station, and got a train back home. And as I was going into the train station, there was fans coming down, they were coming to see us, and they were saying, "I'm sure that's Tommy Bean over there. He can't be." And they were coming on, and just said, "Hi, lads. Yeah, no, that's a long story." And I, you know, when the day before he tells you you're playing, and I sort of rung all the family, and then all the family were coming down, and then 3 hours before kickoff, he decides to change it. So. And that was a part of the ways end with it.
Check out exclusive City interviews on our website, bluemoonpodcast.com.
That was Tommy Booth talking to me about City's last trip to Peterborough. Let's bring in Tim Studley from the Peterborough United podcast, The Yellow Block. Hi, Tim.
Hello, buddy. How are we doing?
Not too bad, thanks. I was going to ask how you're doing, but it's the outlook doesn't feel great at the moment. Second bottom of the Championship, no manager, one win in 18. How are things?
Yeah, I mean, do you know, it's a fun old time to be a posh fan. We have actually announced the manager this morning, so Grant McCann's come in. We seem to only do things at Peterborough where we rehire managers that we've previously sacked. That seems to be our way of working. So Grant McCann's back in for his second stint. You know what? We did okay last night away at Fulham on Wednesday evening, and it's, you know, we're in that position now. I think most of the fan base have accepted that we're as good as down, so we're kind of just enjoying it. And I think the players have taken that stance, so performances have actually improved. You know, we're still travelling well support wise, so it's not as doom and gloom as perhaps the table would suggest. It has been a disappointing season, of course, but you know, on the scale of the Championship, we're kind of just enjoying the ride now as much as we can.
Yeah, how do you feel about the new manager? Is it a good appointment or?
It's the most Peterborough United appointment possible, I think, hiring somebody that you've sacked just a few years ago. I mean, Grant's a good manager. He's done okay since he left us. Obviously, we kind of offered him his first sort of foray into management, and he's done okay since then. most recently at Hull. I know that the Hull fans didn't sort of speak too highly of him, and he lost his job when the new owners came in there. But he's okay. I mean, there's a bit of a charm, I guess, in that we don't really know what to expect in terms of how he's developed as a manager and his playing style. So it's almost like a new manager in that respect. So how he'll do with this squad that he's inherited, I'm not sure. But I think cautiously optimistic is probably where we're at in terms of the manager.
Yeah, so he'll be in place, I guess, for the City game, because he'll be in place for the weekend, will he?
Yeah, that's right. So he was at the Fulham game last night, just in the stands. It was kind of the worst kept secret in the Championship, really. Everybody knew he had the job, apart from, it seemed, the betting companies, who kept the betting open right up until it was announced this morning. So I'm sure a few people cleaned up there. He's been announced today, so he'll be in charge, ironically, against Hull at the weekend. So he gets to have a bite at his old club, and yeah, then he's obviously, we've got the game against City to look forward to.
Yeah, how's that been received in Peterborough? Because I saw there's a kind of rush for tickets online, wasn't there?
Well, to be honest with you, we were kind of hoping for a tougher tie. for a club like Posh, we traditionally we don't get good draws, and I know probably lots of clubs say that, but we normally end up with mid-table Championship teams or teams in our division. So it's very nice for us to play. Well, there's no argument, really. It's the best team in the country, and therefore by default probably one of the best in the world just now. So for us, it's a great experience, as you know, as fans, and for the players particularly. Was quite surprised that Darren Ferguson resigned before the City game. His mind had been made up for a couple of weeks that he wanted to leave as manager. But if I'm a manager, I'm thinking, well, I'll hold on to the City game, because that's, it's what you get into the game for, those big games. So I was kind of surprised in that respect. But no, I mean, there's a real buzz around the club with the tie. But like you said, a real clamour for tickets. There'll be lots of non-Peterborough fans that will go to that game to follow Peterborough, so that will be, that will hopefully bring in a new sort of generation of fans as well. So, frustratingly though, we have decided to produce half and half scarves for this game, which is
yes,
has slightly lost some of the fan base. But from an economic point of view, I suppose it makes sense to cash in on perhaps some of those newer fans that are more willing to buy them.
Yeah, I was going to say, can you have a half and half scarf for a rivalry that exists over one game, over one previous meeting? I don't know if that
worked. Exactly, exactly. I think it's simply the fact it's City. But the other kind of amusing side with the merchandise is they produce the programme, this souvenir programme, a couple of weeks ago. That's how excited we are about the tie. And on the front cover was Guardiola facing one way and then Darren Ferguson facing against him the other. And of course, he's no longer the manager, so people that bought that sort of memento and now finding themselves already with the wrong staff on the front. But slightly amusing, and probably sums up Posh at the moment, if I'm honest. But we're buzzing for this. We go into it with, obviously, with no real expectations. We're fully expecting you guys to bring, it's not going to be your strongest side when you look at the City fixtures and where that game's kind of wedged in between. So but ultimately, even your second or third team is going to contain household names that will have heard of. So for us, it's our big day ultimately, and it is very much David and Goliath, small versus big, and it's just something that we'll savour and enjoy, hopefully.
Yeah, Dan, it's interesting because when you look back at the previous round for City, we knew that the tie against Fulham, Guardiola would go strong because of having the break in the build-up to it, and he wants him to get rhythm back into the players. Could you see it being similar for this? He wants to keep the rhythm in the players, and actually we could be getting a stronger team than many people expect.
I would imagine it would be the opposite, because that Fulham game came off the back of that weird little international break, didn't it? And like you say, they needed some rhythm, whereas I think this is one of the last opportunities we'll get this season to actually rest a few players. And I would like to see Guardiola kind of put out a team that is very respectful to the fixture and to the opposition, but kind of rest some of the more important players, the kind of spine of the team. You know, players like Rodri, De Bruyne, Bernardo Silva, maybe players who we really don't want to get injured. You know, I want to win the FA Cup this season, and I would like to get past Peterborough. But if it comes at the expense of us losing Kevin De Bruyne for 2 months because he does his knee in or something, then it's ultimately not worth it, is it? So yeah, I would imagine a strong team that he'll pick. It'll be players who perhaps didn't start against Everton this weekend will get the chance to start, and maybe a sprinkling of youngsters, the likes of McAtee and Delap, maybe. But I think it's quite a different situation to that Fulham game.
So then here's a question for you two. What do you know about Harry's? Dan, anything?
No, please enlighten me.
Kieran, anything at all?
I think it's a razor blade company set up to combat any like more expensive razor blade companies, as far as I'm aware, and it's got a dead comfortable handle.
I thought you were going to say combat anti-razor agendas there.
If that's their game, David, I'm all for them.
Well, not bad. They're more than just a super sharp razor company, though. Harry's can revamp your whole routine from close shaves and flake-free hair all the way to clear, healthy skin. Harry's helps guys feel good. They're sponsoring this episode of the Blue Moon Podcast, and you can help the show out and give yourself some lovely goodies with their free trial set. In it, you'll get an expertly engineered weighted handle, 1 5-blade cartridge complete with precision trimmer, a handy foaming shave gel, a travel blade cover, and you'll also get a free travel sized shower gel. So Kieran, you weren't far off there. You got the weighted handle bit.
Brilliant. Yeah, I believe you've used it in the past.
I have, yes. And if the listeners can stomach the thought of me in the shower, then I have used the shower gel and stuff like that. The handle for the razors and stuff, the handle makes it easy to shave. It's the gel is the gel's really smooth as well. It gives you a real close shave. The shower gel, it was like the best way I can describe it is like staying in a posh hotel while at home. It was you know those little bottles of posh shampoo and shower gel you get. It was like a bigger one of those.
Yeah, the ones you always steal, yeah.
Yeah, the ones that you always want to take home. Well, that's what this was. While you might think of shaving when it comes to Harry's, there is a lot more to them. The shower gels, face wash and skincare products can be added to shave plans anytime, anywhere. Cleansing and exfoliating before you shave increases the chances of cleaner results. And the Harry's products are formulated with 0% sulfates, parabens or dyes, and they're alcohol-free as well. You can get a trial set and shower gel and support the Blue Moon Podcast as well. Just go to harrys.com/moon. That's MOON, and cover the postage costs of £3.95. Start a shave plan and your freebie will be added at the checkout. That's harrys.com/moon. Kieran, I was going to ask about the youngsters because McAtee and Delap are the two that I think a lot of City fans want to see. And it's currently struck me that I completely forgot to include Cole Palmer in my thought process there. So I don't know if I consider him a youngster anymore, even though he clearly is.
Yeah, he's been injured though, hasn't he? So he's been out of contention for a couple of the last games. I don't know if he's back fit for this one, but yeah, it was quite sad actually after his performance in the Champions League and the goal that he got, that he sort of hasn't been seen since, has he? Was Swindon his last game, maybe? Is that right?
So
I would love to see a few youngsters get a go. But at the same time, I really want to, as Dan says, kind of respect the opposition. And I want players who are more senior to get a bit of rhythm as well. The likes of, I'd like to see Stones get a run out, or Ake, Zinchenko, players like that. But at the same time, it would be really nice to see what this McAtee's capable of, particularly after you just signed this new contract.
Yeah, especially from the start as well. It's a different thing, isn't it, when they're in from the start rather than from coming on for the final 10, 15 minutes.
Yeah, so that'd be a massive vote of confidence for him from Pep, wouldn't it?
Yeah, yeah. Tim, I'm interested. Let's dream big here. Let's say that Peterborough pull off the shock. Who are the players that do it?
Your guess is as good as mine this season, if I'm honest. last night was the first goal we'd scored in over 500 minutes of football. So, I mean, this is the thing really for Peterborough this season. We've lost our identity. We've had cracks at the Championship before, and we've always been an entertaining team. You score three, we'll score four, that kind of mentality. And it's often been our downfall. Whereas this season, we've very much lost that identity, and we've started to try and set up more defensively, which just isn't our way. And unfortunately, we don't have the squad to be able to pull that off. So in terms of individual players to watch for, it's slightly harder to pick this year because we don't have those kind of star names that are your first names on the team sheet. I guess Jack Marriott up front on his day is very pacey. He can cause issues if he's on form, but he's come back from a long injury, and the last few years have been quite injury hit. So there's still an element of unknown. Sammy Smodix, who very much likes the big occasion, he will be really, really up for that game and can absolutely hurt teams. So he's another one to watch. Generally sort of plays more out wide or in behind the front men. But they're all capable of producing big moments, and certainly some of the forward players, unfortunately, we just haven't seen it so much this season. So if we're dreaming big, I'm probably looking at 3 or 4 own goals at the moment. If
what's London Road like for away fans?
Good. It's okay. I mean, it's you know, we've got it's an odd little ground, if I'm honest. We're looking at moving in the next couple of years. We've got a brand new stand, which the City fans will be housed in. So you've got the best, I guess, of the four stands. The atmosphere is pretty good. The City fans will be behind one goal. Our kind of noisiest fans, if you like, are behind the other goal. And because that's a terrace opposite the City fans, the roof is sloped, so it tends to keep a lot of the noise in. So where the City fans are, it will probably seem quite quiet, but actually if you're at the other end of the ground, it's quite noisy. So it's a weird little ground in that respect, but you'll find the facility is pretty good. As I say, it's a brand new stand. It's only, I think, 5-6 years old, although you lose track of time. It's probably older than that now, but it's you've got the best of the four ultimately. So I would hope you'll have a good day.
Yeah. Right, so let's get some predictions on the board. The charity bet total for the season so far is at £1,230. Two chances to add to that for this week. We're raising money for the Man City fans' food bank support. They're collecting donations for the Trussell Trust in Manchester. William Hill is giving each of us a £10 correct score single on City's games. We'll start with the Premier League game against Everton. We heard in the show a bit earlier on that David Downey's going for a 3-1 City win. That's 10-1 and £100 if he's right. Dan, what are you having for this one?
I'm going to go for a nervy 2-1 win for City.
Nervy 2-1 is 17-2 and £85. Kieran?
Back to a clean sheet, hopefully, and more control in the game. 2-0.
2-0 City is 11-2 and £55, if you're right. That brings us on to the big FA Cup tie. Without trying to offend our guest here, Kieran, what are you going for?
Sorry, Tim. 4-0. 4-0 City win.
That's 15-2 and £75, if you're right, Dan.
Even sorrier, Tim, 5-0 to City.
That's 12-1 and £120, if you're right. Tim, it's your time to shine, mate.
Yeah, well, I mean, look, it's magic of the cup, isn't it? On TV, the Peterborough players will be up for it. The ground, no, who am I kidding? I can't see it realistically playing out. But, I mean, you never do know in football, particularly cupful. I'm very conscious of the fact that with Liverpool starting to make moves, the pressure will start to ramp up a little bit on City. And I'm hoping that will work in our favour, especially wedged in between the games that game is. So I am going to predict a posh win. I've got to. I'd be wrong of me to come in here and not. I'm thinking 4-3, 92nd minute winner to send all 15,000 posh fans into absolute raptures.
In many ways, Tim, if it happens, if City are to be knocked out of the competition this season, that's how I would like it to happen. Because we've got 200-1 on that one. So we'll add £2,000 to the pot if you're right. Fingers crossed that if City are going to go out in this tie, that's how it happens.
Are they the longest odds you ever had?
They are the longest odds we've ever had, and it would be comfortably our biggest win if it happens. So
fingers crossed.
I am genuinely at this stage a little bit tempted to chuck a quid on it myself, just in case. You know, just in case at that point. Now, remember, you've got to be 18 or over to gamble. Prices can change, and for more information on gambling responsibly, take a look at begambleaware.org. Tim, just before we go, I've had a little bit of a troll back through Peterborough squads, and just looking for players that had played for both. I just want to get your memories, because the last player that has played for both City and Peterborough was Stuart Taylor. 6 starts for Peterborough in 2001, and he made 1 start for City in January 2009. Have you got any concept of what Stuart Taylor was like at Posh? Do you remember him at all?
No, you literally could have just made that name up for all I can remember. When was that? 2001, did you say?
Yeah, 2001. February 2001. You had him on loan from Arsenal.
No.
No
recollection. No recollection.
How about if I said the name Tony Scully? Does that mean anything to you?
No, you're going back even further there, are you, with Tony Scully?
No, actually, he's a bit nearer. He made no starts for Peterborough, but he did come off the bench 3 times back in April 2003. He was...
it kind of shows the difference perhaps between the two clubs, the fact that there's not too much in the way of players that have played for both. But I don't know, perhaps you could send a couple our way on loan. We can maybe change that, perhaps. Yeah. I'm sure you've got a few that we could have. So.
Yeah. What do you mean you don't remember Manchester City legend Tony Scholar? Everyone knows him.
Yeah, it's what it is.
I was going to say, Dan, one start for City, 8 sub appearances, no goals between August and December 97. It's like, it's not an illustrious career, is it?
No. The only Scully I know is the one who's one half of Mulder and Scully from the X-Files.
Okay.
It's weird, though, isn't it? It's weird, though, because you do, as a League One team, which is basically what we are, occasionally dipping our toes in the Championship, you develop these relationships with certain clubs, and you'll often take players on loans from certain clubs. If I'm honest, I think the reason that we've never really, certainly in our sort of most modern history, never really had much of a relationship with City is because our manager was, of course, the son of Alex Ferguson for so long. So it's highly unlikely that we would have ever formed that sort of relationship. We had a few United players on loan, kind of, calling in favours from his old man. But City's just one club that we don't really seem to have that much history with. But
I've got my ace card here ready to go. So maybe this is the one that does it, because he made 86 starts for Peterborough, 13 sub appearances. He scored 5 goals between March 2000 and August 2002. For City, he scored in a Manchester derby. He made 20 starts, 10 sub appearances, 9 goals between March 89 and January 1990. It was David Oldfield.
Ah, now that does, because the thing is as well, he went on to join the coaching team at the club. So yeah, absolute, legend's probably a stretch, but certainly somebody that's familiar with, is a posh household name, I would probably say. I didn't realise he played for City as well. That's
yeah, he was part of the team that won the Main Road Massacre. Dan, that was the last derby that really happened before me and you were going to games.
Yeah, that's pretty much the only sort of recollection I have of David Oldfield as a City player. Was he Australian?
From New Zealand,
I think.
I'm
getting that completely wrong.
New Zealand, yeah. Yeah, I don't know where I dug that from. That was a real, yeah.
As a pub quiz question, if ever there was one, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Pointless answer.
Yeah, exactly. Finally, this is the last player that moved directly between the two clubs. It happened in 2002-03 season. Brian Murphy, the goalkeeper, made no appearances for City at all in his career. Made one appearance for Peterborough. There you go, Tim.
Yeah.
One direct link between City and Peterborough that I could
doesn't
find.
Ring a bell. Well, I mean, that changes, doesn't it, next week when, like I say, we turn you over in the cup. So, but no, there is a real lack of connection between the two clubs. I can only put that down to the fact that we've got that Ferguson connection, if I'm honest. But because most clubs, we've taken players off, on loan. Most of the Premiership teams, I could reel off players that we've loaned from, apart from City. So we need to change that. Have a word with Pep next time you speak to him.
Yeah, I'll put a word in for you. No worries.
Yeah, nice one.
Tim.
Sorry, David. I have to correct you. David Oldfield was Australian. I dare say he still is, in fact. Yeah.
There we go. So we can't all be perfect, We can't all get everything right all the time. Just the way it is. Tim Studley from the Peterborough United podcast, The Yellow Block. Thank you very much.
No worries. Cheers, fellas. Thank you.
Tim Studley from the Yellow Block podcast. We're going to finish with some listener questions. Get in touch for next week on Twitter at Blue Moon Podcast. You can email through the website as well, bluemoonpodcast.com. We start on Twitter. Joe Maloney says, why is Pep not inclined to change it up when City are behind or even maybe drawing? He doesn't seem to have a plan B and use the full complement of his subs. And with that tweet, he attached a screenshot of the lineup from Spurs showing only one sub, Mahrez for Sterling on the 68th minute. Dan, do you think that's fair, first off? Because I just wonder if City's plan B is pump it into the box, well, like, there's not really a lot more he can do, is there?
No, I mean, as a general rule, I agree with Joe. I think Guardiola is sometimes a little bit slow to change games and bring players on, slower than I would like anyway. But, I mean, there was a point in this game where I was thinking, is he going to maybe throw Liam Delap on, someone who might get on the end of a few chances, or provide a bit of aerial threat in the box. But I think he is kind of reluctant to throw young players in at the deep end in games like that when he relies on his more experienced pros. And then you look at the options available to him. It was only really Mahrez that he could bring off the bench at the weekend to change the game. There's, you've got Stones, Ake, Zinchenko, Fernandinho, Carson, Delap, McAtee, Lavia. There's not a lot there apart from the young lads that that you would say put him on and he'll have an influence on the attack, really. That, and I think generally with City, there isn't an awful lot of wiggle room in this squad for all the talk of it, of us having this amazing deep squad, especially since Ferran Torres has left and not been replaced immediately. I don't think that there is, you know, much by way of options for Pep at times. Whereas, you know, you compare that to Liverpool and their game against Leeds in midweek, they had 9 internationals on the bench. None of them were young players. They were all, you know, players that they've signed for the club. And I think they have a bit of a deeper squad than we do. And that's a bit of a popular misconception that City have the best squad in the league because, all right, we've got the most expensive squad in the league, but that doesn't necessarily translate to having bodies in the building. So,
I think...
I've been broadly supportive of the transfer policy so far of letting Torres go and not replace him immediately. But if we win nothing at the end of the season, you might point to that and say, was that a mistake?
Yeah, I mean, Kieran, there's always a clamour for Guardiola to use the bench more than he does. Because like you see it on Twitter all the time, you know, the game's not going brilliant well and he won't make a sub. And then you think, well, actually, as Dan's just said, most of his subs are either defensive players or youngsters. You can kind of see why, can't you?
Yeah, he's quite a stubborn man who's got this embedded dogmatic philosophy, and he doesn't always like to break away from it. But sometimes, you know, if you trust in him and trust his process, normally it does pay dividends. I mean, Grealish is injured. Jesus, I think, is just coming back from injury, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, Cole Palmer before being injured as well. So.
So if he looks to the bench and goes, right, which of my experienced players can I bring on? Who would influence and change and shape the game? Well, you know, there was nobody really there to do it. In fact, I mean, the one sub that he did make, Mahrez, scored the equalising goal. And by the way, has turned into an unbelievable penalty taker lately, hasn't he?
I know. I saw this. He missed for Algeria, there was a graphic recently when the penalty was given that he had a miss down at the bottom right corner. And I was like, that's got to be the Algeria one, because the only penalty he's ever missed for City was against Liverpool back in his first season.
Mm. Yeah, and we don't like thinking about that again, do we?
It turned out all right in the end.
Yeah. No, it did. But yeah, I mean, the one sub that he made, you know, influenced the game massively. So I suppose I completely take Joe's point in the question. And sometimes you wish he would be a little bit more proactive, but he just trusts in what he sees out there and knows that if we keep turning the screw and turning the screw and turning the screw, then something will happen from it. The worst thing is just when it is repetitively kind of dinking and lofting balls into the box, hoping that somebody's going to get onto it when all our players are 5 foot nothing, you know. so maybe Dalap coming on would have been an idea, but yeah, I think Dan summed it up nicely, didn't he? Throwing young players in at the deep end in an act of desperation. I think he's a bit too proud for it. And I mean, we nearly scraped a point on Saturday. It was just one of those freak things. But you know, hopefully when we bet in these youngsters a bit more, there'll be more trust in them, and then our bench will suddenly go from being inexperienced and too young to being worthy players who we can call on. I mean, just look what happened to Foden, and look how we feel about Palmer already, so...
Yeah. Dan, just final question for the show. Obviously, Kieran mentioned it there. You mentioned it earlier about chucking Dalap on for the Spurs game. It would be... I do find it interesting his reluctance to do that on the back of like, okay, the goal was disallowed, but he showed what he could do against Fulham when he got in position and got the ball in the net. I know he chucked him on in that Leicester game that we mentioned earlier, the 5-2 defeat, but you know, he hit the bar in that game, and there were moments where you're thinking, if he's really, like, for a kid, he's got a real presence in the box. It could have been the different element, couldn't it?
Yeah, it could. There has to come a point where you have to put a little bit of trust and take a bit of a leap of faith in these youngsters. And I think that would have been an opportunity to do so. Guardiola will know why he didn't do that. And I'm sure he has a pretty good reason. And who are we to doubt him, really? But what I do doubt about his subs in this game was the decision to take Sterling off. I wasn't too sure about that at the time. I'm still not sure that was the right choice. Now, I don't know whether maybe Sterling was flagging a little bit or a little bit injured or something like that. But I mean, starting with Bernardo, Gundogan and De Bruyne all on the pitch, I thought was quite interesting, and I didn't think it really worked very well. I don't know if he's going to go back to that at any point. I think it has to be two of those three.
I agree,
And then a bit more dynamism up front. And we'll see what his team selection is at the weekend and go from there.
Yeah. Right, well, that brings us to an end for this week's Blue Moon Podcast. Thank you very much for listening. If you've enjoyed it, please go and give it a rating and a review in all the usual places, but especially on Apple Podcasts if you can. Thanks also to my guests, Kieran Murray.
Cheers, Blue.
And Dan Burke.
Thank you.
Don't forget, we've got a bonus podcast every Monday for Patreon backers. This week was an episode of The Games That Made Me. Think Desert Island Discs, but guests picking their formative City matches instead of music. Murd was my guest for this one. Here's a short clip.
I remember the first game, someone, my brother, saying to me, because he didn't go to the first game. He said, oh, we'll play again now next week, because it was a draw. I remember at the end of this game, I was 8, and I said to my dad, I said, when do we play again? And he went, no, that's it, Spurs have won the cup. And I remember walking out the room, going to sit at the top of the stairs and sobbing my heart out, thinking, well, this wasn't supposed to happen because I support a really good team because they've won all the games and I've seen the games on Match of the Day and we're in the cup final, and the cup final was ginormous. I know it's a cliche, but it was massive back in the early 80s. And I remember it vividly because it gave me a real sense of, right, this is your first shot at disappointment and you're 8. And I thought, well, I didn't know at the time whether I'd need to handle disappointment or not. I just thought, it took me some time to get over it. But I remember it being a gorgeous hot summer's evening. I remember Steve McKenzie's goal. I remember Ricky V's goal. And even when he scored, I thought, oh, we'll score again because that's how it works. That's how football works. And then we'll lift the cup. I was obsessed. And when my dad said, oh, no, Spurs have won, that's it, I was just crestfallen. Yeah. So I remember it. I can remember being sat at the stairs now. My mum and dad still live at that house. I can remember it to this day. I couldn't watch Spurs lift the trophy at all.
That was a clip from this week's Patreon bonus show. It's available to listen to now. All you have to do is sign up to our £2 per month tier, and you'll get 4 or 5 extra podcasts for your money each month out every Monday. You also get this show every week completely ad-free. For details or to sign up, just head over to patreon.com/Blue Moon Podcast. I'll be back next week to review the games with Everton and Peterborough and look ahead to the coming Manchester derby. So I'll see you then.
Was the Blue Moon Podcast. Please support the show. Patreon.com/Blue Moon Podcast.